Reggae Uprising with your host, Denise.
Greetings, Reggae Uprising podcast family, and welcome to another episode. Now, if you are fresh and new to Reggae Uprising podcast, it is all about connecting people of the African diaspora through wisdom, overstanding, inspirational stories, all backed by a soundtrack of sweet reggae music. So each and every Wednesday, we feature a new guest who shares their journey, their wisdom, their experiences for the upliftment of all of us alongside seven reggae selections. Now, all throughout 2022 so far, we've been doing something a little bit different after celebrating the 100th episode at the end of last year. So all throughout January, we featured reggae artists, just purely reggae artists. They shared their musical journey with us. They shared their music. They shared their seven reggae selections as well. And then in February, we dedicated two episodes to Bob Marley's 7/7 Earth Strong, featuring some of his great, great works. And then at the end of February, we had our Inspiration Nation part one and two, where we featured some of the lectures, some of the speeches, some of the works of our brothers and sisters to inspire you on your own journey alongside some high vibrations of reggae music, of course. Now, if you have just tuned in, all throughout March, we're doing a series as well. So we focused on the fact that here in the UK, it has been 2 years since we had the first lockdown in the UK. So we wanted to hear the stories of fellow brothers and sisters from different countries around the world and for them to share their experiences, how they coped, what it was like for our communities in different countries. And also, as Reggae Uprising podcast is all about sharing our stories, our journeys, straight from those people that have had those experiences in their own words, we thought this had to be done in terms of what everybody has gone through over the past 2 years. Now, obviously, there is a lot to get through with our guests covering over the past 2 years. So we didn't have the room to have those seven reggae selections like we normally do, but we have, of course, featured reggae music. So what I asked all of our guests to do is to pick two reggae selections. So the first one being the selection which kind of sums up the past 2 years for them, and the final selection to be some inspirational works, some works that inspired them over the past 2 years. Now, at this point, we have already featured the life and times of COVID UK, the life and times of COVID Jamaica, and the life and times of COVID USA. So if you would like to make sure you are never late to Reggae Uprising podcast, please subscribe wherever you're listening to Reggae Uprising podcast now. Okay. Also, if you would like to connect with me, you can go to daniel.co.uk. So that's daniel.co.uk. You can go to the contact page there. Get in touch with me if you would like to feature an up and coming episode. If you would like to collaborate on some works, if you would like to book me for some works, because as well as being Reggae Uprising podcast host, I am also a singer-songwriter of high vibration. So yes, I love reggae soul music. That is what I write. That is what I do. So if you want to check out any of my musical works, you can also find them via daniel.co.uk. You can find my music videos, my music, my latest performance dates, and you can also subscribe there as well. So you can also be the first to hear the latest news there as well. You can follow me via my social media, which is all at daniel.co.uk. Right, I think it's about time we got started with today's guest's first selection, which is Bob Marley, We and Them.
We don't know how we and them are gonna work it out. Boy, we don't know how we and them are gonna work it out. But someone we left to pay. Order in a innocent blood that they shed every day. Oh, children, mark my word, it's what the Bible says.
Our final episode, our final guest as part of the series, this one being the life and times of COVID Ethiopia. I would like to welcome the Ambassador to Ethiopia and African Union, Jasmine Rowe. Greetings and welcome.
Greetings. Thank you for having me on your program.
Thank you for sharing your time with us all today. Obviously, this week, this final episode is focused on Ethiopia. Can you tell us about when you first found out in 2020 about coronavirus?
Wow, that would have been around March 2020. Of course, all the words were going on around what was going on in China, you know, and then by March 2020, kind of hit UK and all these rules and regulations and how you can pick up this disease and so on. So, you know, it was hard to believe this was actually happening, you know. So I eventually called some of my student friends because we had done a essay about business 2020, and that was done in December 2017. You know, we had to research businesses in the 2020, and it seemed so close with all the things we were researching. Remote working, schools closed, unemployment, and lockdowns, and these kind of things. But it still didn't click because that was 2017. And then, of course, 2020 comes. And then by March, there's this pandemic. And, of course, the fussing, is it 5G? Is it a disease out there? You know, so it's a matter of sanitizing. I was sanitizing the house all around, you know. But along the way, you kind of come out of it and start investigating what was going on and not to panic, just observe, you know. So that's how it was for me and some of my colleagues within the university at the time.
So you went from Ethiopia at the end of 2019. In our conversation just before the interview, you told me that you were in Ethiopia at the end of 2019, and you came back to the UK in 2020. Can you tell us what it was like in Ethiopia at 2019? Was there any, what were you aware of in terms of the pandemic? Were you aware of nothing in terms of anything in China, in Wuhan? And what was the difference like?
Ethiopia is always calm. You know, 2019, there was some situation, community situations that I needed to come in and deal with. I am the representative for the British and Commonwealth. So when it comes to certain security situations, I had to come. So I took an emergency and come in, which I would not normally do in December. I would normally do that July. But I did it in December and come and deal with the security issues. And then, of course, when March came, and this whole pandemic thing that was hitting the UK, I was like, well, I'm in the wrong place. I should have stayed in Ethiopia. But then I had to kind of think, no, I'm doing my university. That's why I came to the UK to complete my degree. So we started to have meetings, you know, with other sisters that were concerned that we sounded like we were stranded in a war zone. You know, the things that we were running away from, that we have learned about over the last 30 years, and we had decided to leave to go to Ethiopia in the Rift Valleys to get away. We were there. So along with some other sisters in London, Manchester, St. Croix, we started to have meetings to talk about the situation, console ourselves, really, and find things to do. We also set up meetings with the herbalists them around the globe, you know, St. Vincent, St. Lucia, Jamaica, to talk about this situation and how this virus that they were talking about, how can we ensure that we don't get it? Because there was a bit of a confusion about, is it the 5G, you know, which was now being pushed, and radiation is going to be a problem. So, you know, the herbalists them listened to what herbs we had in our countries and tell us which ones were good for clearing metal or, you know, so radiation from the body and things like that. And different ways of making sanitizer, because sanitizer at that time, suddenly pharmacies was running out of sanitizer that nobody was buying before. Sanitizers has become a big thing. Mask has become a big thing, you know, and all these things that we just took for granted had become a big thing. So they kind of told us about the aloes and the aloe vera and the eucalyptus and blending to make sanitizers and to protect our homes. You know, everybody was kind of shocked at what was going on. But it seems like the herbalists them around the globe already had an insight of how to deal with the situation, and we have to really give thanks to them, because they have kept us away from the panic, kept us away from the limelight about the whole COVID-19 and the propaganda and the it's this and it's that, you know, not knowing exactly what's going on. The best thing to do was to really protect yourself. And as well, there was a fear, because they were saying that people who were like over 60s and 70s, you know, were in danger. They were the main ones that would be contracting this virus. So I stayed home, you know, and I was in that age group. And where I was staying, it's like every few minutes you would hear the sirens and the blue lights, and everybody comes out and watch what was going on up the road with this ambulance coming and somebody's being taken out of the home. So they kind of used, there was a scare tactics that was put into play. We don't know who was being taken out of their homes. We don't know what was the reason why they were coming, because normally you wouldn't really, an ambulance comes to a house, you see the ambulance, you walk past and go about your business. But suddenly in the UK, when an ambulance came, the blue light was brighter and people was outside on their doorsteps looking to see what was happening. And it was mainly night times. You know, you never really heard the ambulance so much in the daytime. So that kind of make you think, well, if it's a pandemic, you would be hearing a lot of ambulance. You'd be seeing people dropping on the streets. And, you know, so there was a lot of propaganda that made you kind of think about it and think, nah, there's something different going on. So we just hold our ground, got on with what we're doing, and hold our corner, really.
Can you share with us two stories from the pandemic? So can you share with us one from the UK, that that experience, that first experience in the first year of the pandemic, and can you share with us a story from Ethiopia?
Well, with the UK, I would have that one, but where, because I was kind of like, I was staying in Brixton, and not too sure of what is going on, and I'm studying online as well, because by now universities are closed. We're studying online. So, but with all this thing that's going on and watching the TV and hearing what's going on, my vibes was, I need to go and look at the hospitals, you know, because everything was normal on the street. You were allowed to go out for exercise. So obviously I put on my tracksuit and trainers and got the 59 bus down to the bridge to see St. Thomas's Hospital, which is just over by Lambeth Bridge kind of thing, you know. Looked at what was Westminster Bridge, to see what was going on the hospital grounds at St. Thomas's, and it was normal. You know, patients sitting outside having their smoke, but yet the media was showing that the hospitals were so packed and people was dropping like flies, you know. They overwhelmed it. My children told me off for doing it. But the main thing that I had, I was worried about the young people and this, you know, organ harvesting. So my son used to be coming to see me daily, you know, nighttime. He'd finish work and he would ride his bike over to me. So I was worried about him being on the streets at night, because they could pick up the youth them anytime and tell us they died of COVID when they did not. So I didn't want him doing that, but he continuously do it. So what I'd done was, in the middle of the night at one stage, I called a taxi and moved to his flat. So the both of us were staying in one apartment rather than him coming to me and me, you know, him being concerned about me staying by myself and him by himself, he's checking on me. So I moved into his apartment until around the June, July time, I returned back to my apartment. And from there, another apartment out of the area. Eventually, obviously, I, you know, did what I could and carried on, because things was calming down. It's like it was nothing anymore. You just get on with your life, so it was nothing anymore. You needed to wear a face mask if you're going into the supermarkets, which was difficult to breathe, on the buses, and those kind of rules and regulations. It just seems like the people had become prisoners to something, you know? Something was controlling the people, and to me it was more the television, because everyone is like, well, a lot of people was like saying, no, you need to know what's happening. So it's the television. It took a time to realize the television was really brainwashing us about what was going on. They were like updates, and you know, they would advertise these updates that they were going to have an update on the COVID at 6 o'clock and whatever new regulations is going to be at, you know, so you prepare yourself to listen to these new updates. After a while you realize, oh my gosh, this television is really controlling what we do, how we do it. So to me it was like having the slave master on a plantation. So I stopped watching the television. Got on with my work. Every so often I would take that walk down to Brixton to see what's happening on the street. That was the main thing. Some of my families as well, because I did find that it was used as a tool to separate families. Where my family, every Sunday we would come together, this was no longer there. Some of the families were literally afraid to mix with the rest of the family. Oh no, you can't come because of the COVID, you know, and all these kind of things, scare tactics. But the more they watched that television for updates was the worst. With Ethiopia now, no such things. Ethiopia is in the Rift Valley. It's, you don't hear too much talk of COVID. It's not like how it was how it is in the UK. There is precautions according to the World Health Organization's regulations. And Ethiopia now is a place that the people have to work. There's no unemployment benefit. So where they had all these lockdown the jobs and give you some money, Africa don't do that. Africa can't do that. So obviously I go into the marketplace and the women's in the market were sitting a meter apart because it's regulations. If I'm going into bank, post office or government buildings, I have to wear a mask. But what I realize is wear a mask through the door. You know, so you have to have a mask on to come into the building. It does not say that you have to have the mask on in the building. So really and truly, we realize that being outside more in the sun and nobody really spend the whole day in their homes in Ethiopia, it's not something that's talked about. Again, if you're watching the television, you will hear about the COVID and what's happening in England and different places and their numbers. And I think the last time I had actually heard any numbers about deaths by COVID in Ethiopia was about eight. There was 800 deaths. And this was like last year. And I'm like, well, are they following the regulations according to what is required? Or is there 800 deaths? Because all around the globe right now, we don't know if these deaths were so, but we were told any deaths. I saw the papers in the UK. Any deaths during UK during the COVID time, whether you fell off a ladder or whether you had a car accident, your death was written down as COVID. And we still don't know if some of those deaths were really, you know. So, but Ethiopia is not a place that takes that on too much. The precaution is there. But as I say, most people are self-employed. So you have no choice but to get on with your work. If you're selling bread, potatoes or whatever, you go to the market to deal with it same way. But according to the WHO rules and regulations, which was who told us about the COVID, which was who told us the antidote, and, you know, so they bring up the disease and they bring the antidote and try to push it onto other people, other nations. And then there was all the talk that, oh, it's a population control and they want to wipe off the African population, and Africans weren't even watching that. They were getting on with their work and talking about the COVID. You hear about the COVID. If you sneeze, you had COVID. If you cough, you had COVID. You know, that was the kind of attitude, and it becomes a laugh. I noted as well around the only airlines that was running during 2020 and 2020, going into 2021, was Ethiopian Airlines, because Ethiopian Airlines was running cargo, bringing these gloves and sanitizers, which we didn't even know about in Africa. We know about sanitizers. We wash our hands with soap every minute, you know, because, you know, in most places in Africa, we eat with our hands. So it was a custom to be washing your hands every minute. You get on a bus and go to town, you're going to have something to eat, you wash your hands. You come back from the town, you come home, before you touch anything in your home, you wash your hands. So it was a normal thing already, you know, but new products had come on the market. So it became like, oh gosh, we you know, Africa is becoming consumers to other nations, whether it be the pharmaceutical companies or the Chinese with their new face masks and gloves and these kind of situation. So it just became kind of like, say, leave it alone and get on with your life. And this is what's really happened within Ethiopia. Leave it alone and get on with your life. Because if someone is going to tear down your economy, they're going to try to tear down theirs in some aspect, but they have prepared for it. You know, I heard many sounds that said that the COVID was already talked about years ago. The pandemic was already talked about years ago. So they had their plans. And I don't think Africa was really watching them too much on it, and even on the population control side. And I do think that people just give numbers because it was required to say you've got some deaths in your country.
Were there any lockdowns in Ethiopia? You mentioned some of the restrictions in terms of mask wearing. Were there lockdowns? Were there any curfews? Were there any shortages on any products as well? Because you mentioned more consumerism. Was that an issue there?
No. there was no lockdown. There were situations, though, you know, we have Bajaj, which is a small taxi. So where the taxi would carry three people, only one could go in it. So in the early days, it was only one person allowed in a Bajaj, and that one person have to pay three fares. You know, so you want a Bajaj. It was similar with the airlines as well. If you are traveling on a flight during COVID time, Ethiopian Airlines, for instance, you're going to have one seat and then one person is going to be behind you. So you're going to pay for the three seats that, you know, two seats at the side of you. You must have an emergency while you're traveling. So you paid extra to travel. But as for lockdown, no, no way. You couldn't really have lockdown. Curfew was around the June, like I said, the June 29th and 30th, when the dam was due to be turned on, to be filled from the 7th of July. So there was a large Islamic attack. Fires, buildings burned, you know, people killed and those kind of thing. That was quite shocking. But I was out and, you know, we rally around to get supplies to the community in Ethiopia. All over Ethiopia needed supplies, and we worked on that along with the group that, you know, we had started to talk about the COVID in March 2020. So obviously enlarging the groups now, we worked on ways of sending funds and supplies into Ethiopia for those specific, because COVID has gone out the window. There's an Islamic attack. People are dying from, you know, fire, machete, and different kind of things. But as for lockdown, nah, still haven't reached there yet. I think the Ethiopia is filled of different problems that is not a problem. The COVID itself is not a problem because we have too much more pressing problems to deal with, the propaganda and the little war of affairs that's being waged on Ethiopia, that it has never been and still is not a big deal when it comes to lockdown. They have curfews, and the curfews came, as I say, because of the uprising on the 29th and 30th of June 2020. And then, of course, by November 2020, the war had started in the Tigray region. So more curfews to security. And by 2021, the war now, you know, the prime minister had to go out and deal with the issue. So with that, we had curfews. November 2021, we obviously found, no, actually it's about July. Around July, we found there was a lot of propaganda in the Western media, which we were not getting their news. The BBC, the CNN was spreading a lot of propaganda about what was going on in Ethiopia. Not COVID, but Ethiopia was at war and Addis Ababa is under attack and the British and the Americans must leave and the next available flights and all these kind of things was going on. But we couldn't see it. It wasn't there. So that's how we realized that they were using propaganda as a weapon of war. And of course, everyone saw, we had to pass the word out there as to what was going on in Ethiopia and encourage the rest of the world to stand up against this propaganda machine that had been hitting Ethiopia. So you had protests around the globe. You know, Washington, London, I think in one day we had about 37 protests simultaneously, 1 o'clock, you know, so 1 o'clock in Washington, 1 o'clock in France, 1 o'clock in the UK to fight off that issue. So when you look at it, the COVID was not a problem to Ethiopia, you know, but the propaganda war that was being used to recolonize the continent and the nation was seen people saw that, and thanks to the students in the universities and things like that in Ethiopia and outside in America and in England and places, that they saw what was happening, that they could stand up and shout. You know, we done a music, Stand Up for Ethiopia, 22 artists from around the globe to talk about what was going on in Ethiopia, the sovereignty, the dam, you know, the propaganda, fight the propaganda, pulling the reggae music artists back into play. The Ethiopians was doing the same, Kenya was doing the same, Tanzania was doing the same. So we were sending the word out to let our people know outside it's not so. There's no war in Addis Ababa. The war is in the Tigray region, and the Tigrayans are not the problem. The TPLF was the problem, and that they were being used by the America and their allies to try and break down Ethiopia. You know, if they could capture Ethiopia, then they could capture the rest of the African continent. So I think around the globe, if people realized that and started to protest and stand up and their eyes were open, I would say in 2021, a lot of people of African descent's eyes were open to what Pan-Africanism is about and the problem, the situation that they were in their countries, Jamaica, England, America, Ethiopia, Kenya, everybody saw the problem in their countries and realized, no, we have to stand up. And they did. And, you know, this is where we are today. The dam is rolling. The many places like France, Mali, Guinea, they want the colonials out of their countries and so on, you know. A lot of changes, and I'm confident that in 2022, a lot more changes are going to come for the benefit of the African nation, whether they're in the Caribbean, England, America, wherever we are. Changes are going to come for us, and I can see it coming.
So for our listeners that might not be aware, what was the actual vaccine program in Ethiopia, and how was it received? What was the general opinion about the vaccine, and what happened with the vaccine program subsequently?
There was, what was it, this year, last year, some of the Britons called me last year and told me, did you know that USAID had set up a tent at a bus station, you know, just outside of Addis Ababa, and was telling the people boarding the bus that before they can board the bus, they must have a vaccine. You know, Africa is very large. Ethiopia itself is very large. And the government might not be able to see everything that is going on. So this is an illegal act. It's an illegal act. It's one of the AIDS group. You know, you have your Red Cross and those things, taking the people for idiots and literally park up outside a bus station with a tent, telling the people that in order for them to get on the bus, they need to have vaccine. Well, of course, you know, Rasta ain't going to go down that road. They told them about themselves and went on to go and board another bus. We passed the information on to authorities in Ethiopia to let them know that these people was doing this. It was not authorized. It's nothing that was authorized. So, you know, so-called aid workers are not always good for our continent. They don't speak our language, one, so there's always a translator. And our people, even in the Caribbean, will take freeness. So we have to tell them, because it's free does not mean it's good for you, so don't take it. Imagine now in a rural area, there's a tent. These are tents that you would normally see around the country, you know, aid workers, they are called. And they're telling the people that are boarding the bus that for you to board the bus, you have to take a vaccine. Is it free? How much do you pay? If it's free, they will just take it, not realizing that is causing a consequence on their bodies. You know, I in the early days as well, I'd heard about students, young people that had died in the Gambia, where these aid workers had gone and actually vaccinated children in the school, and many of them died. Nobody answers to it. Nobody answered. So we do tell the people them, no, because it's free doesn't mean it's good for you, so don't take no vaccine. So you will have Ethiopians now saying, don't take no vaccine. In fact, they're afraid of it now. In my area, I mean, as you know, we're mostly from the Caribbean, England, you know, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Jamaica, America. We're from that region, and we have our Jamaican community school and things like that going here. So we don't authorize those things in our school. Anybody is going to offer vaccines to children, the letter must go home to the parents. Anything to do with medication. But the people in rural areas, and it's like, how can I put it? Even though you have, like, say, England, look at England, and you have places like Ipswich, which is a town, you've also got villages. And these villages follow what the town does, and the town follow what the city does. So when something is going on in the village, they may think that it's going on in the town, and it's a legal requirement, and they will fall for it. Same thing that was happening here, you know. We just pray, and I think that the Almighty kind of diverted all our minds away from COVID and vaccine, because we had wars to deal with, you know. We had a war to deal with, and with the war, there was recruiting going on, volunteers running, food being prepared. Most of the school areas, you know, injera was being dried to send with the army that is now coming together to go and train to fight off these terrorism. So, you know, you spend a lot of time cooking. You look at the situation, and you needed to collect clothes and food. There was truckloads of cows and goats and chickens that's been donated for the military. And then, of course, there was also to sing. You know, I'm always on the singing side. There was also songs that was to come out to strengthen the people. There was a run as well that, because, you know, obviously, as I say, in 2020, we had that division of uprising, and they were blaming the aroma for it. So around the globe, the aroma got the blame. But when it came to November 2021, all you saw was people running on the street, and you wonder where they're running to. They were running to go to Addis Ababa to swear their allegiance to protect Ethiopia. So aroma, Amara, Gragi, that Muscle Square was full. You just felt so happy that the people, man and woman, had gone there to swear that they will fight to defend Ethiopia. You know, I know the Western media took it out of context and said all these people were inciting violence. But if your home is being attacked, or you hear that you're being under attack, you're going to go to defend. And the people traveled from many, many, many areas to go into the center of the city. And the mayor came out, the prime minister came out to greet the people. Then they came to swear their allegiance, that they will work in unity and solidarity to protect Ethiopia. And we all did. You know, it's, a war is not necessarily fight on the battlefield. I thank those people around the globe that protest and sing songs and poetry and what they did. That was their part in fighting the war. A lot of things. Right now, we're in the process of looking for counselors, because even though the fighting is, like, I would say 1,500 miles from Addis Ababa and more, 1,700 from my area, we still have to think of those people who are in the midst of the war. Psychologically, they need counseling. So we've been calling for counselors to come together, that we can try to find a way to go into the region, that we can give counseling to everyone because they do need it. There's been a lot of rapes, young and old. You know, they've seen a lot of things that they would not normally see in every day. There's funerals every day.
How do you believe the pandemic has changed you over the past 2 years?
I think it's changed me in a way that I realize now that these governments and pharmaceutical companies can say what they want to say to make the people move to it, whether it's true or not true. You know, you have to research, and I do a lot of it, to know what is true or not. So I know to be cautious. I'm cautious of what information comes out, what information I believe, and what information I don't believe. And that's, again, with research. If I see something, it's like I need to check it out. I don't share information that I am not sure about, because that's what the whole, this is something that the whole COVID thing made open my eyes to. That propaganda was such a weapon that you needed to check before you share. Because you can read an interesting story and it seems so interesting. Oh, you must pass it to your friend. And your friend pass it on. And then you realize, was it true? You know, I saw where social media and information, became a weapon. And it's not like it wasn't there before, you know. You know, sometimes you see a person pulled into court because they have committed this crime and they said they haven't. But the media push that they have. And so I really realize how propaganda was in the forefront of what's going on in this world and the control of people and how they think and how they move and how it was used cause segregation and, you know, opinions. Brothers and sisters fell apart because their views and a brother's view and his sister's views was not the same. So they were no longer friends or family, you know. So I saw where propaganda had torn the nation apart. So I watch it and I read between the lines. When I hear and see anything, I mean, like even now with the situation in Europe, you know, you have to kind of wonder how long has this been going on? You know, our parents taught us there's no smoke without fire. One does not just decide to start firing shots at each other. There was a lot of negotiation, a lot of talking, a lot of arguments going on before it reached to that stage. And those are the things we need to look at. When did it start? What were they arguing about? What was there that we were doing that we didn't see this? So it changed me in a way that I look at the media in a different light. Because I would have heard something on the news before, and I would say, oh my goodness, I heard this on the news. You know, did you know this is happening? Without checking out if it was true or false, but I would pass that word. I don't do it anymore. So it this whole COVID situation has changed my thinking.
So speaking of facts, are there any facts that you would like to share in terms of Ethiopia with our listeners when we're talking about vaccines or restrictions? Are there any current restrictions? Share a few facts with our listeners in terms of what they can expect in terms of COVID and any restrictions on passports and things like that in Ethiopia.
With Ethiopia, to enter Ethiopia, you do need to have a negative PCR tests, you know, and what I do advise to people is buy your PCR tests and have it in your home. Do your PCR tests according to, you know, how it's to be done. There's nothing that says you have to stick anything up your nose. You can blow your nose. So that, you know, you take your swab from your mouth, you blow your nose onto the swab and put it in your jar and take it to a place that would analyze it and give you the results. So you have to have a PCR test to enter Ethiopia. And leaving also, obviously with the UK and places like that, they require, there was a time that they require that you book a hotel and they had like the UK, for instance, had a list of hotels that you had to book from. And if you booked a hotel that was £500, that was not the right hotel. You must book the hotel that's £1,200. So it was deterring people from traveling. But that's all it is that you have a negative PCR test to enter Ethiopia. Ethiopia is not pushing no vaccine because obviously Africa is a target when it comes to vaccine. So it's just a PCR test. And, you know, you yourself, be conscious of where you are, wash your hands as normal in places. This is a country, Ethiopia is a place that you can wash your hands all 10, 15 times a day, you know, because you eat with your hands, as I say. So, you eat. But there's no restrictions on, there's no vaccine to enter into Ethiopia. We had, like, I'm sure you noticed that in the end of November, early December, the Prime Minister had, because of all the protests that was going on internationally, he called for the diaspora to come home in time for the 7th of January. That meant the African diaspora, which are those descendants of the African slaves, and the Ethiopian diaspora and friends of Ethiopia. So even though there was no visa available at the airports, we were able to talk to the governments to allow the access at the airports. The visa at airports was locked down because of the whole propaganda and the journalists them. Journalists was coming into this country and sending their tools by cargo to embassies, you know, their embassies or friends, and they were taking up tourist visas at the airport. So they were let loose in the country. So that was locked down. No visa at the airport, no visas at the embassies, only e-visas. But for a month, we were able to make sure now that the Jamaicans, the Caribbeans, the Ethiopian diaspora can enter Ethiopia via the airport and get their visas there, you know, which is a good thing. And I pray that we can carry on to make sure that works for the people of African descent to come onto the continent, because, you know, they're locked out. They're locked out. The Africans are really locked out of the African continent, not through because of regulations of the governments of the countries, but old time rules that were some of them there from colonial times. A lot of the independent states have not looked at the constitution that they have signed for independence. It's locking a lot of the people out, including those that their belly string is buried in the country that they are from. But because they went out to other places like England and America and things like that, you know, we tell them that if you want to work and earn money, you have to give up the citizenship from where you're coming from. So when they're ready to return to their country, they need a visa to enter their country. And these are some of the old colonial laws. So we are calling on all the African continent, all the African governments to start looking at what's in those independence constitutions that they receive. They received it. They were so happy that they received it. They put it in the drawer and not reading the small print. But it's actually locking out a lot of the African people of the continent and opening the doors for the colonials to come in, you know.
So we are drawing near to the end of the interview today. But what I do want to know from you is, we've got a couple more questions. What I do want to know is, what are your predictions for the next 2 years in terms of vaccines, restrictions, people's reactions to them in Ethiopia and the continent of Africa? What do you predict?
I think it will go out the window. But places like South Africa have made their own vaccine. Uganda has made their own vaccine, which is herbal. And, you know, Mauritius had made a tonic. So these things are being used. Even though it's not in the media, they are being used. They are questioning, I hear the WHO questioning Uganda as to what's in their vaccine. Well, they didn't tell us what was in there, so why do we need to tell them what's in us? As long as it's chemically working to do the job or whatever it needs to do. And it's a flu virus, you know, and a so-called flu virus. So I see that Ethiopia, the African continent, is going to grow, is going to lead in this 21st century, going into the fourth industrial revolution. And I can actually see the African continent uniting and along with those in the diaspora and working together. The biggest talk on the African continent now is Pan-African. This is something that most of us in the West, as descendants of African slaves, came up with. So the biggest talk on that now is that. And the courage that Ethiopia has given the rest of the continent over the last few months has made the rest of the continent, you know, the people are looking at where they are. They're challenging. South Africa is letting it be known that, no, all black people came from Africa. All is Africans. You know, there was visitors, but we're not the visitors. And if you're going to take anybody to court, those people that came from elsewhere to settle of color, and the land that was stolen, it's like, say, then it's aiding and abetting. You have received stolen property, and you are living with that stolen property and defending that you didn't steal it because your father stole it and gave it to you. So you are a part of, you know, I can see the unity coming. I honestly feel that our freedom as Africans in the diaspora and on the continent is coming. We've said it, we've heard our grandparents said it, our great-grandparents said it, but I feel that this generation now is going to pave the way for our children and children's children to be able to live in peace and freedom. I mean, you know, we don't know what freedom is like. We don't know what freedom is like. We can take away the shackles from our minds, because we're busy with our work and our assignments and things we're doing. But we honestly, as descendants of African slaves, we don't know what freedom is, because we have always been told to be there at this time, finish at that time. Simple little things like that, you know, fascinated me, because, you know, in England, you need to be at work for 8 o'clock. If you were like 1 minute late, you feel guilty. You finish at 4 o'clock, but you never finish your work, so you work till 4:30. That is not recognized. Africa is not so. Africa says you're doing your work, you go and do your work. If you finish your work earlier than you should, then you go home. You know, so it's more of their minds are more freer. They're not clocked into time. So we're here, and we're having to fit in with it, where we have been programmed so much in the West. And the time, and running for buses, and being there for, you know, I see freedom coming. I see our nation working together, and it is going to take the diaspora to make it work. You know, the colonials have done their best to keep the diaspora, the descendants of the African slaves then, out of the African continent, you know, put fear in the African governments, threaten them. If you let these people here, this is going to happen. So we have seen all manner of things that happen when they stand up for us, the diaspora. But I can see where now they're letting us in, they're listening to us, you know, we're talking to them about discrimination and racism and things which they didn't know. Most average Africa, say Ethiopia or wherever we go, the average, their dream is to go to England or America. Lately, it's more the one to go to Jamaica. But we're still having to tell them that Jamaica is the same as here. You know, colonize and those kind of things. But I can see change. I can see change coming, Danny. That betterment for the nation, for the African nation. If we deal with the things that we need to deal with, the Africa free trade is there for us to trade with one another and build our economy. Whether you're in the diaspora or whether you're on the continent, if you need coffee in the UK, there should be somebody on the ground to supply you with that coffee. We should not have a middleman to supply you with that coffee for you to supply to your nation in the country. And the same with clothes and cloth and cocoa and ackee and these kind of things. We need to be trading with each other and not thinking that, oh, that's something for the white man to do or the China man to do. No, we have to do it ourselves. We have to make that difference and clear pave the way for our children that they don't go through what we have had to go through, because our parents went through worse than us. That's my view. A change is coming. The OAU, the 25th of May, 1963, was when the OAU was set up. And of course, around the globe in the 60s and 70s, you know, you had Africa Day. It's been swept aside. We need to put that back in place. And what we're planning to do is a 3-day in the Africa Union every 23, 24th and 25th of May to make sure that the diaspora comes home and celebrate, talk about the problems and the solutions of what's happening globally, because that's what Pan-Africanism is. We deal with everybody's problem. It's not for one country to be fighting racism, you know, and another is fighting terrorism. The global African and their descendants must work together. So we will make sure once a year, which is the 24th of May, that we come together, conference for the first couple of days to talk about the problem, second day the solutions, and then now we unite the people then to set up groups to go and work on those and fix them. But remember apartheid was not fought by South Africa alone. Internationally, we fight apartheid, protests around the world, boycott, till we tear down something, you know? So we have to do the same for the nation. When you say you want reparations, the whole of the African continent, the whole of the Caribbean and those need to stand together for it, not just a handful of people.
What are the lessons that you've learned over the past 2 years that you would like to pass on to the next generation?
Research, trade, you know, learn a skill that you can work with. You know, don't be afraid of education, don't be afraid of skill, don't be afraid of traveling. One of the best education that you get is traveling to different places, the Caribbean, Africa. Learn how other places are. Don't let no one tell you how Africa is or how the Caribbean is or how black people is or how Rasta is. Travel, research, intermingle with people, you know, talk with people, understand people, because we are one. Nobody can say, you know, you meet Mr. Injai in Gambia and you're Mr. Brown in England. Nobody can tell you unless they do a research to say you're not family, because we're distributed, dispersed over the place, all over different places. And migration, be observant of these migrations that's taking place, people being pushed out of their lands into different places, killings and genocide that you're hearing about, races that is not performing according to how the colonials had want them to, you know, the whole interbreeding program and thing. Be observant of what's going on around. Observe people. Do not say yes because your friends say yes. You know, observant, research things. But I would say to our people, don't be afraid to travel, because that's the only way you're going to learn something. If you depend on media or even certain, social media as well, to tell you what Africa is like, they are not going to tell you the truth, because they don't want you to go there. They are going there, but they don't want you to go there. So research, study as much education as possible, whether it be academic as well as traveling to learn You know, do that. Do those kind of things. Don't be afraid. Don't depend on friends because your friends are not traveling, you're not traveling, or because your friends are not going to study this topic, you're not going to study it. Because this is a thing that went on in school. You know, if your friends are going to take diploma or masters in English or those things, you're going for it. What is that? What purpose is it? The science, the maths, the engineers, the technology is what we need, and we must utilize them, must link with each other globally. And with the technology, you know, ones will sit around and say, well, they can't find nobody to set up their business with. You no longer have to depend on your neighbor, because you can set up business with somebody else in another country. That's how technology is. And I think that one of the things that COVID has also pushed us to do is to use technology. We, you know, I didn't know about Zoom until COVID. Now I'm able to meet with people around the globe, have conference with people around the globe, understand the views of other people around the globe by using these technology. So I would say COVID have taught us that, to use the technology to unite people, because it's conversation that is going to make it happen. And as well, parents need to be able to talk to their children. And, you know, young youths, a lot of the young youths now feel that they're unwanted and, you know, they have to do it by themselves. But over the last few weeks, I've been using this phrase that look around, look at the prime ministers on the African continent. Youths, 36 years old, 42-year-old, 43-year-old, they are running the countries and they are making decisions, as in, and they're talking about Pan-African. We never heard the elder ones talking about these things, but these younger ones. So don't push the young people, because you can see what young people can do if you allow them to do it.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to connect with any of the guests featured in any of the episodes, the links are always in the description so that you can connect with them. If you would like to connect with me, my link is also in the description. You can get in touch via daniel.co.uk. So that's daniel.co.uk. I hope you have a wonderful week and you come straight back here next Wednesday for a fresh and new episode. I am going to leave you with the high vibrations of Serafina. Freedom is coming. Until then, and as always, blessed love.